Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Melanie C., and I am your moderator this morning. Today is Sunday, April 5th, 2015, and the share ID for Friday is 7448, and that would be Friday, April 3rd, and that is 7448. This morning, A Vision for You presents Freedom Within, a story of transformation. As we think about compulsive overeating and recovery, imagine freedom within. What would that mean? How would that feel? And then how would I go about describing that experience to someone else? Where I came from, what it was like, what was the breaking point, and what it took to be reordered, rearranged, transformed, to claim an existence that can only be described as freedom within. What would it be like to have yearned for decades for this very thing, hoping against all hope, to live long enough to really be free? What will it take? What will it be? And what will be asked of me? As an addict, 12 simple steps. An application of 12 simple steps outlined for me and for you in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. That's it. 164 pages and voila, a get out of jail free card. Promise. Well, I invite you to sit back and enjoy this Sunday special presentation today. Here to describe her personal experience and hope for us all is Lauren S. Lauren sincerely has given her life over to service and self-sacrifice to the program of recovery and is a dedicated student and teacher of the directions for recovery straight from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Laura is really a miracle, and this transformation of this 12 steps is evident here. This victory of the freedom within. Join me as we welcome Lauren S. to the line. Thank you so much, and good morning, Lauren. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay.
I'm so glad you're here. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was a beautiful introduction. I hope it's okay if I start bursting into tears at any moment. I've had a very rich morning. I just did almost an hour of prayer meditation to my best friend, God, at a Sunday service with my parents. And the priest during the sermon said the Serenity Prayer. And during his sermon, he said, helping God's kids, which has to be my most cherished phrase in the world. I hope it's on my tombstone someday, just here to help God's kids. And it brought me back full circle to my transformation. So I do consider myself recovered. I've been maintaining about a 75-pound weight loss for 2 years. And the last day that I was in the cycle addiction was October 13th, 2012, or as I keep track of my 11-step inventory, 986 days of peace and freedom for the most part. Before I start, I'm going to say a prayer. God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about this meeting, what's going to come out of my mouth. Hopefully I'm an instrument of you, God. And whatever tears or laughter come out today, thank you. Thank you. All right. So the Lauren's transformation, where did I start? Where did I start in my life? Well, I was born with three dimensions, you know, physical, mental, and emotional. And I had patches of the fourth dimension of the spirit through life. Just these little patches of epiphanies or unexplainable events, love, deja vu, dreams, these little pockets of peace. But it was only relief. It wasn't freedom. My first spiritual experience where all of those nine-step promises came true for me. You know, we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past. All of those came true for me when I was 4 years old. And it was after preschool one day. And my mom used to keep sugar cubes in the cupboard. I recollect binging on those Domino sugar cubes and my mom hiding them in the back of the cupboard and me digging to get more the next day. The next spiritual experience with food was the first time I remember being at my grandmother's house and having a big bowl of ice cream with my siblings at the end of the night. I felt peace and serenity. I felt happy, joyous, and free at those times. But as I have come to realize, that was only a delusion, and it wasn't a supplement for the real ease and comfort that I feel from my loving Creator. I will say, fellows who happen to be listening to me right now, I did prepare an outline, which I have never done before, because I am rather nervous, and I might be sticking to it. We'll see what happens. I also would like to say that I am only recovered today and walking with ease because of you, because of the time and love that you have all shown to me when I could have been alone. There's no way I could pay back all that you've given me. There's no way I could pay back the hours and hugs and love and honesty that you have given me. So I'm just going to pay it forward because that's what we do here. You know, we come with our experience and we come with hope for this permanent disease. All right, so Lauren at age 4 felt the promises. Lauren, until I was 16, was normal as I see it with food. I was one of those people who could skip breakfast, maybe have pizza for brunch, maybe have a late dinner, and a second helping of ice cream, and focus my energy and time on my friends, my homework, fashion, tennis. That was true for me. When somebody said, "What's a calorie?" I related it to chemistry class. You know, the high specific heat of 1 degree of water is a calorie. Or if somebody said weight, I related it to chemistry class. You're going to weigh and measure grams of sodium bicarbonate. Or if somebody said a diet, I thought of the food web. And lions are on the top of the food web and bacteria is on the bottom. That's what I thought of when I heard those terms. Or if you said peanut butter, it was something that to me was a health food, I thought then. If you said salad, I said, oh, yeah, I enjoy it as a starter. But those words became different in my disease. They became about this abusive partnership with food and calories and what my body looked like and how I related to my friends and my family. They took on a new meaning that was devastating in my disease. Cocoa Puffs were once a friendly breakfast cereal that I'd partaken with my brothers before summer, before a nice summer day. Later, Cocoa Puffs became this cheap, bootlegged version of some binge that I would mix with other cheap ingredients to get my heroin food fix in the dark corner of my kitchen when no one was looking. I mean, it was a different existence quickly. What happened was this disease progressed quickly in my life. When I was 16, I was running cross country. I had a healthy body. I never experienced a diet or weight loss or gain yo-yo cycle. I didn't really examine my weight other than the yearly BMI that my school conducted. And for some reason, unexplainable reason, I ended my cross country practice, and instead of eating this cheesy cracker that I would have eaten, no problem, just dug into it, maybe finished half of it, and went on my day not thinking about food. I looked at the back of it and read the calorie amount, and it said 210 for the pack. And something in me flickered and thought, really? 210 calories for this little packet of crackers. And I threw them away secretively. And it was the first time that I recall, with patches of the sugar cubes story when I was four, that I was secretive about food and I felt guilty. And later it would become what a fellow of ours describes as an abusive partner. Oh, I'll be better next time. I'll go to therapy. Don't worry. I'll be good to you, Lauren. Oh, don't worry. I'm doing yoga now. We'll be okay. Oh, don't worry. I'm on this macrobiotic diet. I'll be loving to you. And I believed the promises even when I was beaten and beaten and beaten like the jaywalker, running in front of ice cream parlors, getting trampled down, one arm broken after another. I couldn't get out of the cycle. I couldn't get out of the cycle. So that first packet of crackers led me into a 6-year obsession with calories and weight and peanut butter and salad and diet, just saturating my life, saturating it. Up until when I was 21, it was approaching the later end of my 21st year, and I attended this teleconference for women of body issues. And it was about loving yourself, this manifesto to love the skin you're in, just love your body, serenity, love your curves. And I believed it in theory because I saw those who did. But I couldn't feel it in my heart. And the woman on this conference call who led it said, think about the percentage you obsess of your weight and your food and your body size. And I thought about it and it clicked. I thought it's at least 85% of the day, at least 85 to 90, if not 95%. The other 5% to 15% was spent thinking about my parents and school and finding a job. But the majority of my existence was obsessed with what is my jean size? Can I fit into jeans? Should I shower today? Do I want to see my body today? Is my roommate going to catch me physically? Is she going to see me? Am I going to be able to have enough cash to get binge food today? Where am I going to live when I don't have a job because I can't fit into clothing? These thoughts permeated every area of my existence. It was worse than prison for me. I would go outside in the sunlight and latch on to anybody thinner than me with a judgment of hate, of extreme jealousy, where I had the thought of prison would be more freeing than this, because then at least I have three meals weighted measured, and I wouldn't binge. You know, I'd be in my cell eating my meals, and I wouldn't be forced to participate in the world. Before my first meeting, which was 3 days before my 22nd birthday, September 10th, 2012, I was at the lowest point with this disease. It was a quick progression. I was having another summer where I hadn't worked. I was living off of my parents' money in an apartment with a roommate that I barely saw. I had not attended the summer classes that I said I was going to attend for college. I had missed the first 2 weeks of fall term, again, wasting hundreds of dollars, another hundreds of dollars of my parents' money. I had not completed any of the summer plans I'd hoped for. You know, get a boyfriend, wear, be able to fit into that bathing suit, go take a road trip. I'm here. I don't know where I left off. When that summer before my 22nd birthday, I had spent 4 months doing very little of life. Wasn't working, wasn't going out to see friends. I was going out to buy my binge food, go on the internet, and obsess about how thin other people were and how I can get thin, but later, you know? And it was this existence of, I'm not ready yet today. I'd love to go to this dance party, but today I'm not ready. I would love to travel to Italy, but I can't wear a bathing suit today, so maybe in the future. And it was horrid to have time be so slow. I had trouble walking upstairs. I lived on the third floor of an apartment, and that was excruciating to walk up 3 flights of stairs. My doctor told me I was pre-diabetic, and I was also what you would call agoraphobic, which is I was terrified to leave the comfort of my bedroom to be seen publicly. I couldn't fit into clothing. I had this job that I worked for 2 weeks before flaking out and just leaving, and I wore this huge poncho and these large black leggings, because that's all that would fit me, and this long blue raincoat, and I would sweat as I'd walk to this job in 88 degree heat with this, you know, covering every inch of my body, sweat pouring down, being flushed, feeling so disgusting around this group of people who looked the same every day of the week. It led me to fantasize about buses running me over and not waking up the next morning. So I met with my parents, who expressed concern. They said, Florin, you're not working. You're not going to class. This is serious. What's going to come of you? You can't fit into your clothes. The only time we see you is when you want to go to Trader Joe's to buy food for the week. what are you eating? Like, what? You buy healthy food. What is going on? And I came home crying, which was new for me, absolutely miserable. My parents didn't love me, I thought. And I called this suicide hotline called Allegheny Resolve in Pittsburgh, where I've lived for the past 24 years. And I said, first of all, is this call free? You know, is this toll free, right? And then I said, second of all, I'm not going to kill myself. You know, keep your pants on. I'm not going to kill myself. But nobody loves me. And I realized I didn't have friends. I didn't have support. And that was my existence. I had lived such an isolated, selfish, flaky, irresponsible way of living in my addiction, never showing up for my friends, stealing food, lying about why I can't attend another event, that I didn't have true relationships with fellows. It's not that people didn't love me, but I felt so alone. Next thing you know, guys, I'm on my computer, which I had spent millions of hours on before. That's where I lived, on the computer. And I was Googling OA Meetings Pittsburgh. I want to preface that nobody told me about OA. Nobody in my family was a food addict that went to OA. No one was an alcoholic, a drug addict, a gambler for an anonymous fellowship. I don't know why I Googled OA and why I didn't Google tapeworm diet or liposuction that's under $100. Like, I don't know why I Googled OA meetings or zero calorie peanut butter. It's a phenomenon. A meeting was about 10 minutes from my apartment on a Tuesday at 12:15 in Pittsburgh, which was my first meeting on September 10th, 2012. That same time, I was talking to the advisors at the University of Pittsburgh, where I was a student, but I had not attended any classes that fall yet because I was going to take the term off from school. And I called my parents and my brother crying, saying, I got to do this, and I'm going to spend the time working as a dog walker, going to OA, and continuing with therapy. Now, the dog walking, I flaked out of that, which was not uncommon for me. I could not hold down any job, even for a week. But OA was the first thing in my entire life that I was consistent about. I did not flake. That's another phenomenon. Okay, there's Lauren in death. Now, Lauren in the now, in life. That first meeting, I wish I told you someone gave me a big book and was recovered, but that was not true for me. I will say that every experience for the first 5 months was useful to me and helpful. So that was September. In January, oh, this fellow, I'm going to say her name. She's a light of the world. Her name's Katie S. in Pittsburgh. I called her one day as an outreach call. What's up, Katie? You know, I know you from the Thursday meeting. She's like, Lauren, good to hear from you. This is the second time I talked to her on the phone. She said, Lauren, I'd like to introduce you to this meeting. I've been listening to it. It's unbelievable what these people are saying, and I strongly suggest you check it out. I said, okay, cool. Thanks, bud. Talk to you later. Bye. Click. Typed in on my computer, again, my best friend, my computer, www.avision4you.info. Pressed enter. Up came this website with this beautiful garden path on the heading and the telephone meeting. There's recording special editions. And I went to a Big Book recording, clicked on the day, I think it was like December 27th or something like that, 2012. And what I heard was not stale, was not outdated. It was a phenomenon. It was freedom within, freedom from this disease. And these fellows I heard talk worked a program that I felt in my innermost heart I could stay sober on the rest of my life. If I did what these people did, I wouldn't have to binge another day, and I could get free of this thing for good, one day at a time, for good. Again, I'd like to tell you, these people were like, yeah, just go to meetings, do a food plan, listen to some recordings. But that was not the case, and that's not the case in my experience. 100% of these people said, I am free today. I am recovered from this state of obsession and out in the craving because I worked the steps honestly, thoroughly, and completely trigger-free, allergen-free by the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did very little step work in those 5 months between, 3 months between September and January. I was doing some work with the OA workbook, which gave me relief, but I didn't transform. And it was truly a half measure in my experience. I was committing my food every day to my sponsor. Again, it was simply a half measure, gave me relief, but it didn't give me freedom. I was going to upwards of 7 meetings a week, not including the ones that I would listen to on the OA Light a Candle and OA podcast and the Vision for You. I was listening to at least 7 meetings a week. Again, that was a half measure. I did not get freedom from that. It was just relief. So I had almost, it's not luck, it's just God's grace that I stayed sober during those 3 months. And then during the 2 months, or 3 months before I started the steps. Oh, man. So this is where Lauren's real recovery, I guess you could say, starts. My third phone call to Katie. The first one was about her food plan because she told me she was committing her food the day before she would eat it. And I started to do that. And that was very, very helpful. The second one was about the steps. The third one, or the Vision for You. The third one was she told me about this Big Book study group. I was in this time where I'd lost some weight and I was hanging out every night and I was going with a fellow named Faith to this event at the Rex Theater in Pittsburgh in the South Side. And Katie was performing, essentially, there. Not essentially, she was. And I called her and said, oh, I'm going to see you in a bit. I'm on my way to the theater. I'm just getting a ride on the bus. And Katie said, I'm really excited to see you. Thanks for coming out. I'd like to invite you to this group. I said, okay, yeah, Faith talked about it. It's this Big Book study, right? Katie said, yeah. You know, I'm currently doing it in this other program. We're going to do it for OA. And why don't you text me your email address, and I'll send you the information. And, again, by this time, I had done a lot of work in OA, but I didn't have recovery. So after the event, I emailed my sponsor, committed my question from the workbook. The next morning, I got this email from Katie about this Big Book study, and we use what's called the Big Book of Awakening to go through the text thoroughly and honestly. And we had our first week to meet up with our study and our assignment on March 13th, 2013, which is a bunch of threes. So that's neat. And that day, fellas, was, I mean, I wish there were, like, cooler words I could use in English language, but it was a phenomenon. Let's just say that because I've used that word four times now. It was Lauren's rebirth. It was more empowering than my first OA meeting and my first experience with food when I was four with the sugar cubes. It was a light of, this is the steps. So what happened with me was we would meet every week at Faith's house, me, her, Katie. Occasionally there would be a few other fellas. They would come, and we'd come with our work. We'd meet for 2 hours, and we'd come with our assignment, our big book read, our part of the big book read, our questions answered, our transcriptions and annotations put into our big book, turning all those statements into questions. Do I believe this is true for me? Do I relate to this? Am I really a compulsive overeater? Do I relate to Bill's story? And do I relate how I am agnostic in areas of my life? And I believe God can take me further than every area, whether it's 10 years of sobriety or 10 days. Do I believe that this book has a real message of depth and weight? And I can become recovered if I do what these people did thoroughly. So, 5 to 30 minutes of doing this step every single day, every 24 hours, was transforming, and it was not a half measure. I also committed my completely trigger-free, obsession-free food plan, which has boundaries to it. I don't eat extra food or undereat. I don't eat ingredients that are toxic to my spirit. I commit it to fellows working the BBA study. So people who are struggling with the food and people who have more advanced recovery than me, who have what I want. And the third thing that I did in that time, and I do today still, was every day I connected with people with recovery of depth and weight, people who were free of this thing and viewed this as life or death, as two doors, spiritual life or addicted death. So I did those three things every single day, every 24 hours. And, you know, there are a lot of, I mean, that's not it, guys. I mean, there are a lot of other hours I poured into recovery, but promises came true for me from that first meeting. So I'll just, it's 9:03. Oh my gosh. So, wish I could just explain to you what has happened. You know, I started to view food as what it was, as this is my alcohol. Instead of saying to fellows, no, thank you. I can't eat that just peanut butter or that chocolate fudge. No, thank you. Like maybe later, maybe another day, but not just for today. No, it became no. I thank you, but I'm not going to have that. And in my head was, I'm not going to have that because that's going to kill me. And it was this amazing transformation that happened during step one. I did not come in with that attitude on March 13th, 2013. That happened as a result of going through the doctor's opinion thoroughly and then later Bill's story and seeing his progression with the allergy. Gosh, there's like a million different amazing experiences I could share with you that are not in and of myself, or all because of you. Step two was, my step two experience was simple, because step one was really the foundation of my entire program and is the foundation. I urge you, if you're like me and you are a real compulsive reader, I urge you not to rush step one because you want to get to step four. There's this quote from this, he's not an addict, but he's this spirit-guided speaker named Father Martin, and he says, the clarity that you work steps 2 through 12, your entire program rests on the foundation of your step 1. Don't do step 1 half-heartedly. How we do it in BBA is it's 8 weeks. That's just my experience. But I believe in my heart that if step one is a day, if it's 8 weeks, if it's a couple hours, it's got to be perfect. There can't be a back door of, I have a reservation, I can eat like normal men and women. And to eat is not to die. And I can get licked of this thing, and I can be cleansed of the allergy when I'm connected to God. You know, I had to wash my brain out of all of those ideas, cast away all of those ideas in step one. And what resulted was I gained a reality around who I was and food and my abstinence. I wanted to protect like a baby sea turtle. You know, I know if Katie's listening, she's going to laugh at that. I wanted to protect it like a baby sea turtle. I'd like to say that the first 5 months of my program, when I did all the tools, I looked good on paper. I didn't have much to lose. All I had to lose was a couple pounds to gain and some, maybe like a 5 month chip. A 30-day chip, a couple of those. But when I started doing the big book about the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I used the big book of Awakening, I had so much recovery to lose that I protected it. It wasn't about just, because by that point I maintained about a 60-pound weight loss when I started. It wasn't about that, and it wasn't about the fact that I then had 5 months of abstinence, and then 6 months, and then 7 months. It wasn't about that I was being asked to speak, and people were thanking me after sharing at a face-to-face meeting in Pittsburgh. It was I had real transformation, and I had real recovery to lose. It was real. This was different. This was not dieting with group support. This was working the steps to freedom. This was not a half measure. So my step two was relatively simple. When I accepted I was completely powerless in my innermost self, yeah, of course there has to be a power. I mean, of course, if it's Lauren, if Lauren's the God of the universe, and Lauren is Katie's power and my mom's power and my dad's power, then this planet is going to burst into flames eventually. I mean, there has to be a power, and it can't be Lauren. And step two for BBA was 2 weeks. Simple, not easy, but simple. Step three was a week, or a meeting, I should say, with 6 days of doing the work every day. And this was when I truly felt cradled in the arms of my Creator. I cried for the first time for the first time since that suicide call in September 10th. step three was kind of where God came into play, because my first conception was a goddess named Cosmo. It wasn't the word God. It couldn't have been. I was not ready for the word God in the slightest. And then it transformed in step two into this like woodland fairy tale with animals and like cosmological, I'm not sure, astronomical mother and father and twins and babies, this like Snow White fairy tale family that I pray to. And that transformed naturally into God. I don't know why it's God. I mean, the fact that I can say God and him and it's this beautiful best friend is unbelievable for somebody like me who was so damaged by the church of my childhood and by my parents' conception of what my power should be. So that became my loving father. And that's been my conception since that moment, you know, two years ago, is my best friend, God. I talk to him throughout the day. Like, he is my best friend, who's also the most loving phenomenon in existence. I've never felt an inkling like he doesn't love me. And I know I could murder a baby sea turtle, which would be devastating to my spirit. And my God would be sad. He'd be a little sad. He'd be, "What, Lord, why'd you murder my sea turtle?" You know, but he would love me. He would love me. Okay, I'm back. Right. Sorry about that. I'm not sure if I said this, but I think the last thing I said was about a sea turtle. So God would love me even if I... Hello? I hope I'm
Hello.
Being heard.
You
okay.
are. You are.
All right. Maybe there's just... Okay. Who knows? Step four. Oh, my gosh. In my little outline that I have used to this piece of paper a little bit, I wrote, "We are all connected." So my step four inventory, it's fashion and BBA. It's a four-week-long step, but I did it in 2.5 weeks. And I still attended each meeting and participated, but I was doing it more quickly outside of the two-hour meeting at Faith's house, because I was at this point where I wanted my transformation before the obsession caught up with me. You know, food, I was repelled against food. I didn't want brownies and just peanut butter. But if I saw it or someone was eating it around me, my head was so loud. And it was like, "Oh, Lauren, see, they're eating just peanut." It was like that abusive partner. "Oh, Lauren, you know, it's been 8 months, 9 months. Maybe you're different." And it was like static on a television set. It was so loud that I went to great lengths to avoid seeing, smelling, and being around my toxic alcoholic foods. I say we're all connected because of this fellow who has a resentment. Okay, it's 9:50. Melanie, just to check, I will have this wrapped up in about 10 minutes, maybe 15 if I'm selfish. So this fellow that I'm working with, this beautiful fellow of ours, currently resides in a country where the time zone is 12 hours ahead of mine. And she found me from you. She found me on the Vision for You meeting. She went through this resentment recently because fellows were telling her she was too skinny. And I said, I'll just call her Sam. That's not her real name, but I'll call her Sam for this purpose. I said, Sam, I went through that exact same experience. And wow, I knew one day my experience would be useful. It wouldn't be wasted. And now you're experiencing what I did. And what I did, Lauren S. from Pittsburgh, is I saw and I see a nutritionist who weighs me and who gives a neutral view of, Lauren, you're a gorgeous weight, and she has had to adjust my calorie amount, but I have maintained my weight by her guidance. So every experience I've experienced is going to be useful. It's a phenomenon, man. What other word can I give it? I'm not going to get to all the other 8 steps, but okay, I keep on getting muted for some reason, but I will try my best to just share a experience from the rest of my program. So step 5, I have here, oh man, June of 2014 was when I did a 5th step with my buddies Alicia and Katie, and I shared some things as a recovered woman that I've done in sobriety that I thought they would leave me. You know, scandal, you know, silly things with guys and even behaviors around the food, like eating in my car that I felt like was shameful. And they hugged me and loved me after I shared that. And another one was I was smoking cigarettes occasionally, and I was embarrassed about that. And I felt so loved. I have friends. Step 6, this is unacceptable to me. There are things in my recovery that it takes a lot of pain until I'm ready to give them over. One is spending money. You know, I can tell you today that I don't really like to go into Target and just buy things, but that took hundreds of dollars in sobriety to get to that point of I can't be spending money that's selfish, and I can't remove this on my own, God. Step 7, oh my goodness gravy, I have here, okay, so again, my higher power, I felt like a hypocrite until I really became connected to God during step 7 in my prayer. I said the amen to the 3rd step prayer, essentially, and the 3 frogs jumped into that pond. You know, it wasn't about a decision, I was following through with recovery. And God was so real to me that I felt weird around my parents, who had such a different understanding of God that they almost expressed shame that I didn't believe in their conception. And it was difficult. But God, for me, gives me life, and it has to be a conception that I believe in and have faith in. Step 8, Chris. I met this beautiful fellow named Chris. He's the guy who I just went to a meeting one day in a different fellowship, and he was there, and it changed my life. The best relationship I've ever had with a guy, ever. He is like my best friend who I have thought about dating, but it's with God, it's a phenomenon how this relationship is. Step 9, I wrote Anne-Marie. This is the step that changed my life from being afraid of when I might relapse and being astonished at abstinence to I can actually become recovered if I keep doing this work every day. And I can share among those on Vision for You with a freedom. Anne-Marie was my roommate for five years in college. This is a girl who saw the worst of me, who I hid from. I lived in a very small apartment with her, and I avoided her. I was afraid to use the bathroom because I didn't want her to run into me. I never said hi when she had friends or family around because I was too embarrassed about myself. And when I was doing my steps and my fourth step, I resented her. I hated her. I loathed her. I loved when she visited her boyfriend so she'd be out of the apartment. And I'm telling you this while I'm like in recovery, sharing the big book. Meanwhile, I'm avoiding my roommate. It was this Jekyll and Hyde syndrome. I made an amends to her that was the most beautiful experience. Before I made that amends, I had a thought to binge that I had not had I had one in March, and then I had one in November. And when I made the amends to her, it was in September. And a fellow, one of you, told me, you got to make this amends. And I sat down with her and I said, Anne-Marie, you know, I stole food from you. I wasn't there for you. I hid from you. I wasn't a good friend. And I shared what I've done, and I let her share her experience with me and how I could repay it. What did I leave out? Is there anything I can do to make this right, Anne-Marie? And she said, you know, what you did, it made me sad. Like, you're my friend and I missed you. And she said, oh, Lauren, I got to go. I'm going to this wedding now. I'll see you later, okay? And I was actually going to a meeting. Or was it a wedding? One of them was after my dad's amends. It was a meeting. I was going to a meeting with Katie and another fellow, Jessica, Thursday at 7 p.m. in Pittsburgh that I go to regularly. And I got in that car and I said, I love Anne-Marie. I hope she's okay. Anne-Marie expressed she's splitting up from her boyfriend, and I wanted nothing more than to be there for her and love her as a friend. And it was amazing. It was a phenomenon. All right. Step 10, 11, and 12 are, for me, all about growing. A fellow of ours who shares on this meeting regularly says, we're like a flower. We're either growing or we're dying. There's no standing still. So my step 10, I like the paragraph on page 70. That is Katie's listening initial laugh, because I always bring that up. And it says, when we make mistakes, because we will regularly, if we're honest about what we have done and have the honest desire to let God lead us to better things, we will not relapse. But if our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to binge or undereat over it. We're not theorizing. These are facts of our experience. So when things happen in Lauren's plan and, you know, she's smoking cigarettes, which aren't spiritual, you know, I have not touched them in about a year and a half. But, you know, I don't consider that a very guiltless act. I know that if I have an honest desire to walk with God, that experience with those cigarettes or that eating in the car will, or that, you know, 13th stepping at a meeting will be useful to others. But if I don't try my best to clean house, help God's kids, and trust in Him, I will binge over that. You know, it'll be the spiritual malady leading to the obsession, to the allergy. Step 11. Oh man, I just came from church where I practiced my step 11, closing my eyes, praying, and feeling God's presence. I also practice a more formal with a timed meditation morning and night. And my step 12. Step 12, you know, I'd love to tell you I always loved sponsoring, but I was afraid to do it the first year and a half. And today, my sponsees are, oh, I love them. Like I would give my life for them. I would give my life. I would be the jaywalker if one of my sponsees could be free of this. And I truly believe, fellas, that if you honestly, thoroughly, and willingly work every 24 hours, a completely obsession-free, trigger-free food plan, work the steps from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous at least 5 minutes every day, and are committed to and connected to a fellowship of depth and weight and fellows who are free of this thing, you will become free of this, and you can stay abstinent and free, not just one day at a time, but one day at a time for good. And, the last thing, you know, there's all these cool little phrases that I picked up along the way, but the last quote I'm going to leave you guys with is, we survive in a herd. And I'm going to tie it in the last, I'm going to try to give this story in like 2 minutes. There's this fellow named Bob, B-O-B-D, his last initial is D as in dog, and he's from Las Vegas. This man has done so much for guiding me to this recovery that there's no way I can repay him. I mean, if I ever meet him in person, I'll probably be dumbfounded. That'll probably be one of the rare times you don't hear Lauren speak at a meeting, you know? And he tells this story about this herd of zebras because somebody asked him, what about young person OA? And I'm a white person in OA, and I'm an Indian person in OA, and I'm an old person. And Bob says, you know, we share our similarities and we excuse the differences. And it's like a herd of zebras. And you're right. There are those who are along the side, who are in their little groups, who are isolated. And you're right. They are different. Their dinner, you know, it's like their dinner. You know, they get picked off by the lions. He said, we survive in a herd. We survive in a herd. And that's why right now I'm no different than the fellow who's in the food, tears in her eyes, sweating from food fog. And I'm no different from the fellow who's happy, joyous, and free, living peacefully with her family and loved ones, free from this condition. We survive in a herd. We are all vital, I believe in my heart. And that was not something that I came in believing on September 10th, 2012. Thanks, guys. That's all I got to share. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Lauren, for your personal story today. You gave so much of yourself. Just very grateful for that. You know, ending with such hope and possibility. Appreciated. Much appreciated. Thank you, Lauren. You know, some of our fellows in the audience today may have questions for you. Would you have time to stay around and field some of those questions?
I do have time.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. So then I'll turn our attention to those that are on the line that may have a question. If you press star 1 to unmute your line, you'll be able to be heard. Who among us has the first question today for Lauren?
Hi, this is Susan.
Hi, good morning, Susan. Go ahead with your question.
I don't have a question, just a comment. I just want to thank Lauren. She is my sponsor, and I'm blessed to have her in my life. And she's been an inspiration to me. She's so passionate about her recovery, and she just shines the light. I mean, she's just an amazing person, and I'm just grateful to have her. She walks the walk, and she shines God's love, and that's what I saw in her, and I really think on this Easter day that it's really about shining God's love and helping others, and she is an example of that, and I just want to thank her, and I'm grateful I woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, and that negativism, and the poor me, and something said, you better get on that phone and listen, so I just wanted to say thank you and thank you for everybody for this program and just to be reminded about the surviving in the herd because I can very easily go back. It can happen in a day, like in my little bubble, you know, and poor me, and I'm different from everybody because I have this other stuff in my life. And I just want to say thank you and happy Easter to everybody.
Thank you, Susan. I have a question for Lauren this morning.
Hi, this is Katie S.
Hi, Katie S. What is your question, please? your question
okay.
for Lauren this morning. Yes, thank you.
My question. First of all, thank you so much, Lauren. I love you. And my question is, what would you say to the fellow who has, what would you say to our fellows who are relapsing or struggling with the food and how, you know, how would you gear your program towards them? And I know that the only thing that I've ever really heard out of your mouth is this loving God's kids and helping others. So how do you direct that to those in need today?
Oh, my gosh. First of all, fellas, I have both of you written down in my outline as a bright spot of my life. I have here Susan with a little son. How did she find me? Because I owe you my life. And same thing, Katie, I owe you my life. And I owe all of you my life. Sponsees and fellows who are in the food, I'll share a fellow of ours, Debbie L. She helped me greatly with this. She said, Lauren, whether you carry a message that's horrid or a message that's beautiful, if they're ready to have their transformation, they're going to have it, and there's nothing you can do. And Bob D. talks about the adjective, are you sponsorable? Are you sponsorable? And when I work with somebody who's sponsorable, they're ready for their transformation. They commit their stuff. They do the work. They protect their abstinence. They avoid those seemingly unimportant decisions, as one of our fellows says. I believe it's Joe M. And they're sponsorable. And then there's those who need more research and development, who keep relapsing and are in pain from it. And I'll relay one of my sponsees, let's call her Danielle. I had the pleasure of seeing her, tears in her eyes, dead, saying, I keep doing the work, I'm doing the BBA, but I keep relapsing. What's going on? And I said, Danielle, before you feel hope, you have to be hopeless. And there's a fine line between surrender and mental breakdown. I believe you're at that jumping off point. And I have more hope for Danielle than I ever have, ever. Because every last binge is more sufferable to her. And all I have is my experience, which was, I wasn't done until the food became so painful that recovery was a step up. Food no longer gave me ease and comfort. It gave me pain. And I didn't even come in wanting a solution. I just came in because I was going to die. Not everybody needs to have a bottom like that. But I do think that somebody who wants to become recovered from this thing needs to want to stop eating or under-eating for good, not because their doctor or their spouse or their friends want them to, but they and their innermost self want to stop for good. And the second is that they've experienced somebody who has a solution, and they want a solution, and they would rather put recovery first than all of the time it took to get the food. It's simple, but it's not easy. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks, Lauren. Anyone else have a question for Lauren this morning?
Morrissey.
Hi, Maura Z. Good morning. What is your question?
Thank you for your service. Good to hear you on the line this morning. Lauren, I appreciate your share this morning, but I'm troubled by something. I hope you can perhaps clarify for me. You spoke of taking 8 weeks to do step one.
Yes.
And my understanding is that we must move swiftly through these steps in order to get to our, you know, spiritual awakening, if we are so blessed by doing the work thoroughly, promptly, quickly, because otherwise we're going to pick up again. So I'm a bit disturbed and confused while you're taking 8 weeks to go through step one with your sponsees. And also the second question is, what's DBA?
Okay. Somebody would ask, thank you, Mara Z. Fellas, thank you for all your questions, because I know that you are helping so many of those on the line and in the future with your questions. Okay, why 8 weeks? BBA is just a way of going through the book. So A Vision for You is a beautiful meeting. BBA is just a beautiful way to go through the text. You know, I've heard of the OA workbook and the HOW way, and there's a bigbook.info, and there's, you know, Joan Charlie offer a workshop. There's all these ways, and BBA is another way that I find, and there's a website for it, but that's sort of something that maybe I'll share off the recording, that if you do the book thoroughly, and BBA I just found is how I did it, then I believe 75% can recover like was intended in the, I think it's written in the first foreword or the second foreword or the preface. Now, 8 weeks. So BBA goes through the text in a way that is a half of a chapter or a whole chapter a week. And each chapter has questions and considerations with it. Out of the 103 pages devoted to steps 1 to 12, 43, I believe, are step 1. So step 1 is almost 50% of the working text. And again, I just have my experience, which was my step one had to be thorough and drawn out, and every word of step one in the text, the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, more about alcoholism, there is a solution, and even part of We Agnostics, when they talk about the spiritual malady and the bedevilment, and then the first two paragraphs of that chapter, they all have to be discussed and written about and taken in my heart, because my step one propels me in everything I do. You know, when I'm in my ninth step and I'm not sure if I should do an amends, it's not because I haven't worked a thorough eighth step or a thorough fourth. It's because I haven't taken step one in my heart of, I still can run the show. I'm not going to eat over this. I'm not that bad. I can wait. Or in my fourth step, when I think I can draw it out or not write it thoroughly or not give it over in step five, that's not because I didn't work a thorough third or a thorough second. It's because I haven't worked a thorough first step, which is, I got this. I don't need to do this quickly. My fourth step, I can hold on to some of these secrets. I'm not going to relapse over it. So, you know, I know there's fellas who've worked step one shorter than 8 weeks, and they have a program that I respect. And there's those who work it longer than 8 weeks, and they have a program I respect. So I know how I work it is different, but BBA really doesn't let you kind of gloss over any of the working texts, especially in step one. Because step one motivates me in everything I do. everything I do. It's all down to my powerlessness, and I'm going to die over this if I don't put recovery first. So thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Morrissey, for the question. Thank you, Lauren, for the answer. Anyone else with a question this morning for Lauren? Press star 1 to unmute if you're interested in asking Lauren a question.
Hi, this is Susie in Fort Worth.
Hi, Susie. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much. Oh, my gosh. What an amazing share. My sponsor and I both got a copy of the Big Book Experience, and we're still writing it in our big books. A year later, we're still working on getting everything changed. And I keep asking her if we can't, like, change it together so we could at least be working the experience together. No, she says we have to get the whole big book changed before we can start working it. What do you think about that?
Okay. Thank you for your question, your helpful question. So, again, I just worked through the Big Book of Awakening. It's this blue workbook with this other question packet. It's from San Diego, and it's designed to be completed in a study in 20 to 22 weeks with the kind of sliding scale with the fifth step. Like, if you do your fifth, they kind of give you an extra week to schedule your fifth step. I guess, yeah, so and another week is devoted to, I believe, another step, which might be 2 weeks or 1 week. I didn't change anything in the instructions. You know, people who have recovered from the BBA, and Katie was getting the promises. Like I said, she was having recovery in it from another program, and her sponsor was recovered in it. They didn't change any of the instructions. They just said, answer these questions, put these annotations. And it really shouldn't take longer than 22 weeks. Like I said, I only did about 5 to 30 minutes every day of work along with the two-hour meeting. And I was able to get it all done. A fellow of ours on this line, her name's Kim, she says if somebody throws you a life raft, you don't ask about changing the color. You know, so when I was desperate, I didn't change my food plan. I didn't change the BBA. I just surrendered and just did what people told me. But putting myself in your shoes, if I'm working with a sponsor to go through the work and it is taking longer than I think it should, I am a little confused why it is taking longer than the 22 weeks if you are going through the BBA, but I would, you know, I'm a little confused. I don't have an answer, which is kind of cool because I think I know everything. I'm going to tell you, I just shared you my experience, and the best I can do is ask fellows. Usually what I do when I don't know an answer is I ask a fellow or two about your question, and then I'll share, and then I'll, like, get back to you. So thanks, I'll pass.
Thank you, Susie, for the question, and thanks, Lauren, for the response to that. I just wanted to send out a gentle reminder this morning that there's wonderful outside issues that help guide others and folks through their recovery. But in the interest of respecting the traditions here, we don't, you know, just but lightly maybe explain something about. But just if you would keep your questions to things within the traditions of OA, And then save maybe the outside issue ones, if it's very specific ones, for when Lauren gives her contact information and you can speak with her offline about that. Thank you so much. And so does anyone else have a question of Lauren's recovery today based on the AA Big Book Program of Recovery? Thank you.
Hi,
yes,
this is
Sherry
Kathy
from Massachusetts.
Did I hear Sherry? Is that what I heard?
Yes, Sherry from Massachusetts.
Hi, Sherry from Mass. Go ahead with your question for Lauren.
Hi, Lauren. It was great to hear you. I started the Big Book Step Study process about 7 years ago, and I have continued to pick food up. And after listening to your experience, Strength and Hope today, I am kind of thinking that I really, you know, in the way that I did it, which, you know, is great, but no time was spent on step one. And people would say to me, you know, my outreach calls that I make, well, Sherry, maybe you didn't do a thorough step one. And I would be like, well, how, you know, I went through it with a, you know, qualified Big Book Step Study sponsor and a loving God. I can't imagine that she didn't bring me thoroughly through step one. But after listening to you today and listening to the way that you do it in BBA, I really think that it's very important to spend a lot of time on step one, because if you can't do step one and you skim over it because you're getting to all the other steps, for me, my experience is I've continued to pick up the food every couple of months. And I really think at this point that I need to find another way. And I'm not saying that the way that that I did it, and I continue to do it because I continue to go to those Big Book Step Study meetings and I get tons of recovery. But there's always a fear in me, like, I'm going to pick up again. I know it. And, you know, the freedom that you talk about, I believe, is a freedom, and it's not just relief, because I get relief, and I know the difference. The freedom that you talk about is the freedom that I would like to have and not have that cloud over my head going, you're going to pick up again, you're going to pick up again, because you really think that you can do it on your own. And I think that that's because not enough time spent on step one. So I'm just very grateful. I believe that God put me on this meeting this morning to hear just this. And I really believe that step one is very important. I'm very anxious to get your number afterwards just so that I can talk to you more about it and find out who I would need to contact to maybe, you know, to get involved with it more. Thank you very much, Lauren. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Sherry. And again, you know, I know I talked about a specific way of working the text, but I find that it just comes down to the Big Book. And instead of reading it as a book of answers, oh, yeah, 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 I know the doctor's opinion. Oh, yeah, I know that. It's really pausing between the statements and asking myself and writing about it, what's my experience with this, and is this true for me? And now how I worked it, are there are guided questions. There are transcriptions that you write the questions in. It's very, very, like, study guide, textbook, helpful in that way. But laying aside that specific format, Big Book, turning it into questions, really pausing and relating Bill's story to your story and your allergy to the doctor's opinion and the reservations they talk about in War of Alcoholism and There is a Solution, and relating yourself to Fred and the Jaywalker and the Mr. Carpet Slippers, I think that that is a way to work of depth and weight and recover thoroughly. I don't know if that was clear, but thank you, and that I'll pass.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Lauren. Anyone else with a question for Lauren this morning?
Hi, this is Kathy from Illinois. Can you hear me?
I can. Good morning, Kathy. Go ahead with your question, please.
Good morning. Thank you. I think you might have already answered this, Lauren, but, well, first of all, thanks for sharing your story and your recovery. I am working on my ninth step amends right now, and I'm stalled, and I'm really hesitant to make some of my amends, and I wondered just how you got through your amends, how you, if there was a delay, how you got the momentum, and just some of your experience on the ninth step. Does that make sense?
It does. Thanks again. And what came to me in the interim before my last talk was, guys, I'm just another bozo on the bus. I mean, it's kind of silly for us to give these shares and put myself as a leader. You know, this can be dangerous for my ego, you know, acting like I know anything. But what comes to me is, like, I'm no different than you. I'm not, you know, I need you. So ninth step. I'm going to say it. First step propelled me. Like why I didn't stall on calling people to make the contact, writing the amends cards, going to them face to face, was because I didn't want to relapse. And I knew to relapse was to die. And I knew that my obsession would beat me down and would catch up with me eventually. And it was progressive, and if I picked up, I might not have another recovery in me. I know I have another relapse in me. So my first step really grounded me into working through the amends before I relapsed. And even today, you know, I live in a recovered state. Food, I have neutrality around food. It does not call to me. I do not want to overeat. When I need to make an amends today, my first step experience brings me to do it. I have to make this amends because it's gonna lead to it's gonna drive the spiritual malady, which they talk about in We Agnostics, and it's gonna lead to the obsession, which they talk about in step one in those four chapters, and it's gonna drive the allergy. And when I think it's Ruth who talked about this, when I'm in that cycle of binging, I can't get out of it. It's a miracle that I stop. So my amends, there were some I didn't want to make. One was to my roommate, Anne-Marie, and I almost ate over it. That was a serious one, and I called one of us, and she said, "What are you doing?" She saved my life. She said, "You make that amends. What are you doing to your recovery? You're going to lose it all." And I think it's really crucial for me to have in my network fellows who, I don't want to swear, but I guess I'll use a synonym. Who won't pussyfoot around, who realize this is a serious disease and are going to tell me the truth. So we're going to say, "What are you doing? Make that amends if you want to live." Not every fellow is like that. Some are like, "Oh, it's cool. You know, you're doing the best you can." So I think if you're like me, you got to make those amends. There's no way around it. If you want to live free, you got to do the amends if they're appropriate. And I think it's important to talk to a fellow before you make them, make sure they are appropriate. I think there's a big difference between having all amends done and having all but one. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you,
Kathy Ann, for the question. Thank you, Lauren, for your response. Does anyone else have a question for Lauren this morning?
Carol G.
Hi, good morning, Carol G. Go ahead with your question, please.
Morning, Melanie. Morning, Lauren. Thank you so much for your wonderful share. You're so radiating love. I can feel it all the way in England. My question is for you today, my dear, is How would you describe your current experience of the practice of step 10 and 11 with this awakened spirit that you're talking about compared to the days before you were transformed? Thank you.
I get so lit up from like talking to you. I just did a little happy dance. Now, before I answer that question, Carol, you know, this program is beautiful. I have friends in London. I have friends in Bali, in Israel. I mean, this is so cool. I tend to geek out, as you will, about this fellowship. I don't know if it's good or bad, just my experience. So 10-11, before I really felt walking hand-in-hand with God, I did it as part of my discipline when I was doing my amends. My step 10 was through the day when I would remember to feel, when I would feel restless or afraid or selfish or resentful or when I lied, I would talk to my higher power and say the simple prayer, thy will, not mine, be done. Bob D talks about three kinds of prayer. And one is, help me. The other is, grant me. You know, the serenity prayer. And the third one, which I feel misguided actually towards, is, whatever God, thy will. I'm not going to give you a command, just thy will. So, my step 10 was that, and the other part of my step 10 was when I owed an amends, I made the amends, and I was still kind of doing my first crop of amends, so it was kind of mixed with my first ninth step, and my amends, when I was early in step 10, were more formal. It was still like my note cards or my, you know, amends with fellows that I did before recovery. And my step 11 before was disciplined reading the big book, page 84 to 88 every morning, and doing a 5-minute timed meditation or a guided meditation, and then writing a letter to God in the morning, and then and reviewing kind of my plans for the day. What am I going to do today, God? Like meditating on the day ahead. And then my nightly 11th step was answering those questions in the big book, in my journal, and then also doing like a timed 5-minute meditation. You know, where was I selfish? What could I have done better? Where do I owe an apology? Today, it is a different experience with my 11th step, absolutely. My 10th step, to be honest, my 10th step isn't solid. That's why I do continue to go through the book at least one time a year. So right now I'm doing like a thorough second step again through the big book. Because my 10th step alone, I can really let go, like, I can really forget to do a resentment inventory or a thorough amends. So I do a thorough step 1 to 12 with fresh eyes, as if I'm like coming into the rooms for the first time at least once a year. My step, and also whenever I'm feeling the chatter, nothing ensures immunity like intense work with another addict. So the tool of the telephone, whether I'm talking to a sponsee, somebody struggling, or somebody with better recovery than me, it clears away the chatter more than most other methods. And my step 11, guys, meditation is a joy. I seek comfort in it. Where before, when I was blocked, meditation was miserable because my mind was so loud. I was listening to this meditation that changed my life, named and this meditation was a 30-minute one, and this man, George, said, you can't meditate wrong. As long as you are
earnestly trying and making the effort, you can't do it wrong. So I love meditation. I listen to a guided one where they kind of tell you how to breathe, how to picture your atmosphere. Or I like to listen to nature sounds or beach sounds. And it's a joy. And my 11th step, yeah, I still do the questions and I do my letter to God every morning. And it's kind of exciting. I don't know. I it's kind of fun to do now. I'm like, where did Lauren try to run the show? You know, like where was I trying to run the show? It's kind of fun. I enjoy my time with God. So that'll pass.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you, Carol, for the question this morning. And it is the top of the hour, and I want to thank everyone. Oh, did somebody have a question before we close?
Yeah. Hi, this is Tara in Florida.
Hi, Tara. Let's take one more question then this morning, and you can
sorry,
take us to the end of our meeting this morning. Thank you, Tara. Go ahead.
Thank you. Lauren, thank you for your share today. Wow. Such a joy. I'm really happy to, I just have goosebumps. I wanted to ask you how do you talk to people, if you met somebody who you wanted to share your experience with as sort of a prospect, a 12th step, it's a two-part question. Do you go to any certain places other than OA meetings? Or like if you were just at a bus stop or something. So anyway, you want to answer that. It's kind of an open question about 12-stepping and your way of doing it.
Hi, Tara. Now, Tara, I talked to Tara yesterday, and I owed Tara an amends because I practiced my 10th step yesterday with Tara because I was not pleasant to talk to on the phone with. So I would like to offer that. That's another way of doing my 10th step. I do a lot of informal amends today. So my, you know, public outreach, how to carry the message in all my affairs. There's a fellow who does a fantastic, I know personally, he does a fantastic way of doing this. She works in a clinical setting. Actually, I know a few fellows, and they carry, when people ask them about weight and disease, they talk about OA. I've had some experience with fellows talking to me through OA who are new, but fellows who are not new to OA, who are just friends or prospects not familiar with 12 steps. Two examples was I made them during my 9th step. Two. One was Brittany, and she was a friend that I made the amends at my house a year and a half ago, and I was not there for her. I lied. I flaked on her a lot. And we talked about food. Actually, three people. She struggled with food and throwing up. And I was able to offer her what I do and my freedom. No, four people. Guys, I keep on correcting myself. But the other three were three fellows I also made an amends to, Emily and Brittany and Anne-Marie, who all expressed their problems with food. And I made an amends to all of them, not expecting to be like a 12-stepper, just kind of telling my side of what I did. And they ended up saying that they had problems with food. And Emily actually went to a meeting with me to watch me share my story. And the other one, Brittany, two Brittanys, Brittany too, went to a meeting as well. And, you know, I just, they just aren't where I am. That's fine. I don't know if they are going to come back to fellowship. So those are people I knew personally. I have met countless people who I don't know personally, and I haven't told them necessarily about Overeaters Anonymous, but I have had people ask, how did you lose weight? And what do you mean by you used to be crazy with food? Like, what do you mean? And I just say, I actually did a spiritual program. Like, it's not just about the physical for somebody like me. I have a spiritual problem that is the focus of what I do. And I work with other people who are like me as a mentor. And I kind of put it in terms like that. Like, it's a spiritual way of living. It's more than just about the food. And I usually, if not always, say that the food I eat isn't diet food. It's food that is nourishing and I love it. Like, Lauren, what's your abstinence? My abstinence is I eat plant foods. I'm a plant-based addict. So, but I love the food I eat. I wouldn't eat donuts or Jif peanut butter ever in relation to what I eat, God willing. So hopefully that was helpful. That'll pass.
Thank you. Thank you, Tara, for your question. And that does take us to the end of our meeting. And thank you again so much, Lauren, for sharing so much and spending this extra time and answering some questions from our fellows in the audience today and receiving those other pieces of sentiment, as you heard, you know, from some of our other fellows. Lauren has generously offered to give out her information at the close of this meeting, and that will be coming up here in a moment. And I'll close this meeting like we do all of our meetings here on Sunday Special Edition with reading page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.